From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh.
Talking tabletop gaming and nerd stuff once again for a Thursday night on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. This is The Dice Man Cometh with Trent.
And Mark.
And Garth.
And if you're listening to this show and wondering what the hell is going on, welcome to the long tail of the internet. The long tail of the internet. This is where the mainstream shatters into 10,000 tiny little pieces, and we're here to glorify and fetishize just one of them. Just one of those little pieces. And if you've got no idea what I'm talking about, go and ask your communications lecturer.
And if you're wondering what we are talking about, well, you want to go to edgeradio.org.au and look on the front page, because our photo is in high rotation. But what we are talking about tonight, we're going to talk to you about Cthulhu. We're going to talk to you about Asmodee, the great gaming giant that's slowly swallowing up the whole world of gaming. We're going to talk about a game we can't talk about, and we're going to have a Kickstarter update. All that and more.
This here is for everyone who's been complaining that my heavy metal selections have not been heavy enough.
Yeah, baby.
Godzilla.
I know them.
That'll do. Sufficient. The sound of Godzilla to start us off tonight on Edge Radio. Hello, it's the Dice Men Cometh back on a Thursday. Trent, Mark and Garth talking. Well, look, there's another full show full of tabletop gaming goodness. It's a thing, tabletop gaming.
Absolutely.
Apparently, yeah. We've been talking about it for 59 episodes now.
Wow, have we?
I keep a running tally here in my little, book. There we go. Have we been playing anything lately?
Look, we have been playing some great stuff. I'd like to start by talking about the game that we played last week. It's very exciting because it's so hot off the presses.
Mark, we're not actually allowed to talk about this.
What?
No. Oh, no.
Really?
You signed your life in blood.
Remember. Was that the thing I signed?
Yeah, it's secret.
The non-disclosure agreement.
The secret playtest that we've been doing. So.
Yeah, we can't talk about the secret game that we have been playing.
Damn it!
Have we been playing anything else?
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, there was that other thing where you killed me.
Yes.
Remember?
Mark joined my Call of Cthulhu campaign. In fact, Mark and Garth joined my Call of Cthulhu campaign. We've talked about this on the show before, Call of Cthulhu, the old school 80s RPG, which is still alive and now in its 7th edition.
Yes.
But I'm so old school that I'm playing the 6th.
And I was so excited to come along because you had so many people sign up to this that you had to actually split it into two groups.
Put it out there on RPG Taz on the Facebooks and, yeah, too many people to fit in one session. So I'm looking to maybe kill a few people off. And I started with you.
Yes, well, and because here I am, you know, like I'm at my work. It's not very exciting, I'm afraid, what I do. So when I've got a little bit of time on my hands, I've been spending it building characters. And of course, I put hours and hours and hours into this fantastic character.
Oh, well, that'll learn you.
Hilary Edmund. From a famous New Zealand mountaineer at the turn of the century. She was just fantastic and a beautiful accent as well. And now she's dead.
Death by flower. Death by flower, Mark. Really?
It's like a bad Batman joke, isn't it?
It's awful.
We'll get to this, though, because you're the polar opposite of what Garth's effort was, which was, I've been too busy to roll up a character. Can you make something for me? And I'll just turn up and I'll wing it.
Exactly right. And I survived.
Yeah, it just goes to show, doesn't it?
So I think the setup of the story or the scenario was that you guys are all gathered in a...
In my house.
Having
a lovely dinner party.
In the neighbourhood priest's house in Staten Island in June 1921 in a leafy, middle-class, very white suburb in what has just become the consolidated five boroughs of New York. And you look out the window, and what do you see?
Well, I see nothing but a very drunken Hillary Edmund.
She wasn't very drunk. Just had a couple.
Allegedly saw my neighbour removing boxes from his car, and it seemed to be a little arm fell out from one of the boxes.
Children's body parts.
Mm.
And so, of course, as they did in the 1920s, dinner party broke up and they immediately went across the road and attempted to break into the man's house.
Well, we went to say hi and to say, oh, look, you know,
you went to
going
say
on
hi,
here.
You accosted the man
we
in his
door
home and demanded to know why he was dragging body parts around
the
street.
Yeah, isn't that fair enough? I'd do the same today to my neighbours. In fact, I did this the other week and they said, mind your own business, it's just a rolled up carpet.
Which is pretty much what happened.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's probably a bit close to home for Hobart.
A little bit. Let's move on and
yes.
pretend you didn't say that.
Mm.
So, look, thereafter all sorts of awfulness ensued and you eventually made it into the basement of the home to find something horrible laying in wait for you. But Hillary's demise was next door.
Yes.
In a house that had been overrun with some kind of strange alien species of plants. Garth, tell us about what happened.
Well, we opened the door, the front door to this, you know, seemingly normal house. We found out it was abandoned. The 90-year-old neighbour had not been seen for a little while.
Mm.
We creeped up the stairs, our intrepid ex-detective who was kicked off the force for some reason we don't really know about was leading the way, leading the charge. But then old Hillary decided to go and look into the bedroom and lo and behold, she sees this beautiful, large, grotesque flower growing out of the bed and she then,
it was looking at her
in
a very sort of strange way which just put her off. So she's probably spent a few seconds too long looking back at it
whacking it with a stick.
She
didn't whack it with a stick.
At this point round the table, I was sort of approaching Mark with a kind of like a sock puppet sort of hand raised up in the air saying, this flower was sort of turning and looking. I was just sort of leaning across the table slowly towards you and my hand was getting closer and closer. You just stood there going, oh, I'm not doing anything. I'm not worried about this. Oh, it's getting a bit close, isn't it? I think I'll hit it. Whereupon it exploded, you inhaled the pollen, and,
that was the end of me, pretty much.
It was a nasty
It was downhill then.
The
amazing thing was I actually succeeded with probably about 50% of the constitution rolls, and I still died in about 5 minutes.
Thankfully, we had a history teacher who tagged along as well, who sort of saved the day and sort of actually started to figure out some of the things that were actually going on. But, look, it was a one-shot scenario. It was just a little bit of a warm-up for all of us. Did you enjoy yourselves?
Yeah, look, even though I died, I had fun. And I always do. And I know I sort of... sorry, Garth. Did you have fun?
I did, because it was my first role-playing game that wasn't a Star Wars one.
Ah.
So it was, you know, Back to the Future with some Cthulhu from, 1980s something or other. And it was great. It was really interesting to see how different it was from, you know, the Star Wars RPG.
Yeah, not so much dice rolling and more opportunity to develop story, which
exactly,
you know, that is the part that I love.
Well, as you guys have often pointed out, I'm not the most on top of the rules of whatever game we happen to be playing.
But that's the great thing, because we can get away with whatever we can get away with.
Well, that's the great thing about having the
screen.
DM screen
yep.
around you,
yeah,
where you can just fudge it completely.
We don't know you're not actually doing anything behind there.
And it was just roll for sanity. Oh, okay, yeah, sure, let's just roll for sanity.
And this is, of course, all leading up to the Mars of Nyarlathotep campaign, which will happen. And that Kickstarter that I backed for the props is coming along, apparently.
And in my Kickstarter update, which is coming along shortly, I'm
going
to talk about another Mask of Nyarlathotep or something like that.
Companion.
Companion.
Yeah, I know. Look, I know all about this. I've been having a serious think about it. Okay, well, look, we'll talk about that and everything else that's on Kickstarter at the moment. Next on The Dice Men Cometh, it's Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Sounds like when you play games, Trent, for a few times, it's finally sinking in. That was Ape by the Infants. You're with Edge Radio 99.3 FM with The Dice Men Cometh with Mark, Garth and Trent.
Hurtful and needless. Let's put it behind us and move on.
Oh, you know, look, I hear a line in a song like that, I have to use it. And speaking of which, it's time for the Kickstarter Roundup. Oh, bit of dubstep. Doof, doof, doof. Anyway, we'll have enough of that.
Dubstep is just a word you heard a kid use once
when
you were hanging around the bus mall, isn't it?
This is a youth station, though.
That's
true.
Right. That's right. True. So Kickstarter, look, there is so much happening on Kickstarter.
every week. It's really hard. You look at it every 3 weeks and it's like, oh my God, I missed about 50,000 projects.
So what is there that we can put our money down for and wait 18 months to stop being cool? Well, As per Bruno Cathala's opinion.
What's really exciting is there is a lot happening, but I will let you know, hot off the presses, I'm going to have a chat with Alan Cheng from Rule and Make Games, who had a game, Rise to Power, which was a very successful Australian Kickstarter towards the end of last year. And that game is actually getting out to the backers. I'm having a chat with him early next week to get his idea of what's happening with Kickstarter, sort of to follow up on what Bruno Cathala was talking about.
Yep, yep.
And because he's got another project coming to Kickstarter soon.
It's funny you should mention that because, of course, Two Rooms and a Boom,
yes,
that you know, that I backed, they've put out another update to all their backers this week saying there's been an error in the printing, the colour matching. And now it's being delayed until May or possibly June. So that puts it about a year behind schedule or certainly close to. And so, yes, that need to communicate with your backers in a positive way despite communicating all this bad news. I'll be very interested to hear Alan's take on that next week.
Absolutely. And look, talking about Kickstarter projects with problems. Now, Conan, the new Conan Kickstarter that's just completed, I think, yesterday, raised $2.5 million.
And no end of stretch goals.
Fantastically successful. Yeah, stretch goals out the wazoo. Once again, tick those three boxes, I think, of, well, it's a game, it's a well-known property, and it's got miniatures.
Right.
We all know miniatures just go berserk on Kickstarter. Well, just before it completed, they did a bit of an update because one of the things it had was, we're going to give you an approximate idea of what the shipping cost is going to be.
Oh, no.
But we'll get back to you at the end what it's actually going to be like.
Oh, no.
So shipping to Australia on that,
$80
for shipping.
Wow.
I think it's about $50 to Japan.
Yep.
$40 in Europe or something like that. It's absolutely amazing. And, of course, this has created a huge furore because people have committed their money. The project's ended. They go and read the update and go, what? So I don't know how that's going to turn out, but apparently that sort of thing is happening now on a few different projects. So another really interesting thing that's happening with Kickstarter.
Oh, and, you know, that's going to be weighing that much because of all the Kickstarter exclusives.
Absolutely.
And so your retail product that comes out in 2 years' time is going to weigh less and therefore cost a lot less.
Yeah, but, I mean, that, I think the game with that is about $80 or $90, you know, you're going to be up for, you're getting around $200. Anyway, look, one of the brand new projects on Kickstarter is Ghostbusters, the board game. Who are you going to call?
Cryptozoic?
Cryptozoic. So, you know, they have had the DC Deck Builder, the Penny Arcade Deck Builder games, the Walking Dead board game, known very well for licensed product, not so well known for fantastic games. But this one looks really interesting. Now, I was actually doing some research, believe it or not, half-assed, when this just hit Kickstarter just the other day. And it's funny because I wrote down here, 29 days to go and 7% funded. A day later, it's 110% funded. You know, and when we say funded, we're talking $250,000. So basically raised $250,000 in just over a day.
Yep. And what a basic lack of information on the Kickstarter page as well. You know, it's got a video that's all wacky and zany. Do you know how it plays? No idea. Do you know what the rule set is? Nothing. There's no rule book links. There's no nothing.
Had a quick look at this. There's no artwork from the films. I mean, the artwork's fine, but it's in the animated
There is in the video, but yes, you're right, not in the actual game.
And it really just looks like a very basic Flashpoint-style cooperative game, a sort of entry-level thing for non-gaming people that's going to go straight into the mass market.
Yeah, well, to me, it's it looks like almost another version of Zombicide or all those Flying Frog games, the Martian one, the Zombie one, the Gothic one. Hello, Flying Frog, if you're listening, we love your games. But they're very samey, and this look like that.
Just one quick thing, because I was looking at it, and I was thinking, that Stay Puft Marshmallow Man miniature, that's not big enough, although it is pretty cool. And then I see in the stretch goals, there's a giant one that you can get.
10 mil.
Yeah. And look, that's the other interesting thing now we're seeing with Kickstarter with stretch goals is more and more it's not, hey, but you also get this, you also get this. It's now you can have access to this if you want to pay more to add it into the game.
Yep, so it's pay more minis, pay more this, pay more that. And yeah, it's just digging those fingers right into your wallet even more, isn't it?
I wonder how much the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man weighs.
Anyway, look, it's going to be another hugely successful one. But again, $80 for the game, $125 for the deluxe game, and they've packed in all this extra stuff. It's not actually part of the game. It's like one of those film cell pictures and things like that. But again, $60 for Australian shipping. Mm-hmm. So the deluxe game plus Australian shipping, $185.
And of course, it's going to have the expansion for the new film that's coming out with the all-female Ghostbusters cast.
Well, it looks like it's just wide open for, you know, a huge number of expansions, which of course is great. Look, another one, and an Australian Kickstarter. We haven't seen a lot of them lately. Planetary Rain by Wish Maiden Games. A guy called Serge, or Sergey, from Melbourne. Now, it's halfway through. It's only 13% funded. So if we wanted to get up, you guys need to get on board. It is actually the only Australian board game on Kickstarter at the moment that I can see. It's supported by Games Salute, although they're not involved with the production, which I'm not really sure what that means. But look, it looks interesting. It's a 4X game, so you explore, expand, exploit, exterminate. It looks a lot like Eclipse. Very Euro-y space game. Your sort of, you know, no plastic minis. It's got lots of cubes and boards with grids and things on it.
A resource management space empire game.
Yeah, but look at
it. Because we don't have enough of those.
Yeah, yeah. Look, and it looks really high quality. So, yeah, check it out. Planetary Rain by Wish Maiden Games. Did you know that Wish Maiden is another name for Valkyrie?
I did not.
I learned that.
Thank you.
By researching. Exploding.
Research good.
Exploding Kittens. Who doesn't know about Exploding Kittens? It's up over 6 million. Still got about 7 days to go. It is the most backed campaign of anything in Kickstarter history with over 146,000 backers.
And it's not even a game that looks any good.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, who can't get enough of cats?
See, this is the problem with our hobby because, you know, people sit down with one of these dodgy card games. Oh, no, I don't really like card games. That's because you haven't played a good one.
Anyway, speaking of cat dodgy games on Kickstarter, Schrodinger's Cats, because we can't get enough of cats on the internet, can we? This is a beating card game, and look, it's so cute. It's got great characters like Albert Felinstein, Madame Purry, Stephen Porking.
No.
Look, it's got 8 days to go. It's over 200% already, so it's obviously going to go. It's a cute little beating card game with cats, great little artwork. So have a check a look at it. Not exploding kittens. That's Schrodinger's Cats.
Tell me there's a picture of a cat in a motorized wheelchair, and I'll buy it.
Oh, I don't think so. But they're very cute, the artwork. Look, another little one. Epic PvP Fantasy. It's a fighting card game. It's a little bit like Smash Up, where you pick a race or character type, and a race and a type. So you can be like a halfling rogue, a dwarf cleric, and so you get the cleric deck and you get the dwarf deck and you munch them in together and that becomes your deck. So very much like Smash Up. And then you fight each other because it's PvP. AEG have just come on board. So it's got 12 days to go. Look, it's already 600% funded. It only costs $40. Again, it's got the shipping where they're saying will tell you what the shipping is at the end of the campaign. Mm-hmm. Now, it is a card game, so it's probably not going to be massive, but, you know, we're seeing more and more about this. And it's the same company that produced Miskatonic School for Girls and a couple of other deck builder type games.
I guess I do feel sorry for companies who, you know, are trying to calculate that shipping because it's not like there's uniform shipping prices. It's not like there's one company that does everything. Yeah. You know.
But still, I really don't like the idea of we'll tell you later, especially for us.
Well, in this day and age, do we need that? Are you able to do enough researches to get enough idea of what your game's going to weigh?
If only we had somebody who we knew who used to deal in international freight. Garth.
Well, I did used to deal in international freight with dangerous goods. So if you need to get some monkey brains,
this
or
is true.
Weapons,
you,
this
you,
is true.
For a career, you used to ship medical supplies, viruses, 12 monkeys style all around the world. Didn't
the
you?
The whole shebang, radioactive missiles, all this kind of stuff. Allegedly, but no. Yeah, look, it's not a cheap thing to do, especially the dangerous goods side of things. But I just find it amazing that they can't come up with at least an estimated cost that's within $10 for Australia. So it should be something that can be easily done. You can easily volume it out.
So because of the seriousness of the materials that you were working with, I imagine, you know, you've got to have your T's dotted and your I's crossed.
It's about a 55 to 60 point check for everything, whether it be a can of deodorant or an infected monkey brain.
Is this just a case of these board gaming nerds not having their proverbial together?
Quite possibly, yeah. I reckon it could be, because you can speak to any freight forwarder, any courier company, and say, this is how much it's going to cost, or this is the size of it, and they'll volume it out to the maximum potential weight and give you a costing.
I mean, maybe they don't know how successful these projects are going to be, but I don't know. I feel like I'm scratching for excuses. Look, a couple more super quickly. Pretense, a game night social metagame. So you get given a character...
Yes.
And this has been backed by a friend of ours, so I'm hoping it might make an appearance at BorderCon. You get given a character, and basically, if you fulfill your one little goal, you get to take someone else's card.
Yep.
And the aim is to have the most cards at the end of the night. Yep. Now, so, I saw a card for you, Trent.
This is played right throughout your board gaming night.
Yeah, the whole night.
Yeah, and through multiple other games that you're playing while you're socialising with people.
Yeah, so like there's a card which I saw which would be great for you.
Okay.
It's called the Sore Loser. If you come in last place in two games in a row, you get to take someone's card. There was another one where if someone passes you food, you get to take someone's card.
Oh, Trent could have that one as well.
If someone passes you the rule book, you get someone's card. Look, it looks really interesting. There's only like 10 cards in the deck. It's only $9. It's actually just about to finish up, but it looks really interesting. Four words you want to hear together in gaming: chain mail dice bag. Who can go past that? It's actually, they tried to raise $500. They raised $46,000.
What?
They're $45 plus $25 each. There's the Space Cadets Away missions. I'm not talking about because there's not enough time. The Great War. It's an adaptation of Richard Borg's Command and Colors idea from Memoir 44 from Command and Colors in the World War One era. It's 150% funded. It's raised £25,000 because it's an English project. That looks really fantastic. Trent.
I just want to point out that we played Russian Railroads the other night, which is a big deal for me playing a train game, and I didn't lose completely. I mean, I came third out of four.
You did, yes.
It made up for the fact that I lost that other game that we were playing that we're not allowed to talk about because it's secret.
Oh, yes.
Maybe we'll talk about it a little bit
later. Yeah, let's talk about that soon.
Can I mention one quick thing about Conan?
Yeah, sure.
Because it actually raised $3.3 million and is the most successful board game on Kickstarter ever.
Really?
Yes.
In terms of dollar amount.
In terms of dollar amount. So unlike Exploding Kittens, which is the number of backers, Conan was actually $3.3 million and the most successful board game in terms of dollar value, outdoing Zombicide and a few of those other ones.
I was going to say, it just goes to show how successful gaming projects, and we're not talking video games, we're talking analog games, are on Kickstarter. We've been talking about this for ages. We're going to be back in a minute. Microwave Jenny there, locked in the closet after a game, mind you, of Spin the Bottle. Here we are with the Dice Men Cometh. Maybe we can play that game later. On Edge Radio, 99.3 FM.
I don't know.
What better can three men do around some stubbies of beer? Anyway,
anything.
We're back now.
Mark, I know it's your birthday today, but I am not playing Spin the Bottle with you. And I don't care how old you're getting and how, you know, depressed you are about your state of affairs.
Oh, I thought your wife might be home.
Jesus.
Anyway, look, I did forget to mention, and I know I teased it earlier, the Masks of Nyathala. Yeah, those masks. The Masks of Nyarlathotep Companion, which is a different Kickstarter project to the Masks of That Thing prop set.
Yeah.
Have you looked into it at all?
I have, and as I've explained, I'm waiting for that to fulfill before I sort of start playing it. But then if I wait for this new Kickstarter to arrive, and I'm sure it's a great, it is a great looking project. There's extra scenarios in it because, of course, that's a campaign that needs to be longer. you're going to be looking at August at the earliest actually get. I'm not waiting that long to play it. I'm almost ready to go. So, yeah. So well, look, if you guys don't mind, we'll be playing on a slightly incomplete version.
No worries. Look, I better roll up a few more characters, half a dozen or so. Yep. No, but look, one of the interesting things to me about that project was, you can actually do an add-on of the prop set, which is a completed Kickstarter, but they've done a deal with the company that's producing it, so you can add it on to this Kickstarter, which is really interesting.
Does the prop one then get delayed and you don't get that until the other one? Is that how it works?
I don't know what the timing is. Yep. But look, it was interesting. As I said, it's already 300% funded. It's £30 for the softback edition, £50 for the hardback edition. You can get a PDF edition, and it seems to have a massive amount of information in it, which, when you look at it, it's almost like, hey, all this information is public already. We're just going to bring it all together in one place and charge you £30 for printing it out.
That might be the other reason I'm not backing it. Okay, so that's on Kickstarter right now if you're keen. In the meantime, I wanted to have a little chat about the French company Asmodee that we talk a lot about here. It's the new supergiant in the gaming industry, the publisher and distribution company Asmodee, which was formed in 1995. And I just thought I'd spend a little bit of time doing some half-assed research just so we know exactly what it is we're talking about here when we talk about this company.
So what have they been focused particularly on?
Are they a behemoth? A behemoth in the gaming world?
Well, they are these days. 350 employees, 44 countries they operate in, 9 subsidiaries, $200 million in revenue as of September last year, 10 million games sold in 2013.
Wow.
They want nothing less than to be a global leader up there with your Hasbros and your Mattels and Legos and all those other brands.
But if it's $200 million of revenue, knowing board games, that's probably about $2,000 profit or something.
Well. It's a slightly unusual story and business model that they have. The company actually started way back in the 80s, and it was seriously a backyard project in France. Three guys, Nicolas Thierry, Eric Bouchard, and Laurent Tremel. I have no ear for French, so I'm butchering
and
those.
And no tongue for it either.
They were a part of a little RPG club in high school in the 80s, which they called the 20 Natural. And from there, they formed Siroz Productions, which produced French-language RPGs. Siroz, which is French for cirrhosis, a.k.a. scar tissue on the liver. So I think I think that tells you actually everything you need to know about these three guys.
Oh, that would have been a good segue to a song if I'd had that handy. Anyway, continue.
Oh, shall I?
Yeah.
Thank you. They sold the company in the 90s, though, look, a lot of this information is actually in French, so I'm relying on Google Translate for this.
Here we go.
So it's
English.
I guess I should sort of put a proviso out that none of what I'm about to say may be accurate. They had an employee by the name of Mark Noons who came into Siroz Productions and allegedly kicked the founders out. and he went on to work with Philippe Moreau and a guy who calls himself Croc, who's a...
Started a shoe factory.
Well, no, he's a fairly controversial sort of designer.
Is he with Space Cowboys?
I'm getting to that.
Spoiler alert.
I'm getting to that.
And another song segue.
Oh, my God. And they built Siroz into Asmodee and changed the name over in 1995. Asmodee, the French version of Asmodeus, one of the 7 princes of hell. Hello?
Really?
Does anyone have their classical education?
No. But I was going to say, Asmodeus, Asmodeus, rock me, Asmodeus.
It doesn't really fit with their logo, which is a nice little happy sort of smiley face. It's all purple and yellow. Yes, it's named after a demon. So Asmodee's core three, Mark, Felipe and Croc, they really built the company up. In 1999, Jungle Speed was a very, very successful title for them. You got to match cards in a pattern and be the first to grab the totem.
It gets so fun the more you drink. Oh, my God.
Things really turned around in 2003. They got the distribution license for the Pokemon title in France. In 2007, they expanded into Belgium and Germany and into the US for the first time. In 2010, they won their first Spiel des Jahres for the game Dixit.
Mm.
And in 2012, they expanded into Shanghai for the first time. So it's this exponential growth. And it's been a matter of constantly getting new investors on board, these three guys working together to build the company up. This culminated in, I think it was November 2013, when an investment group called Eurazeo moved in and essentially bought Asmodee.
Mm.
And that happened about 6 months after the announcement that that core dream team, those three guys from Asmodee, were leaving the company to form Space Cowboys.
Yes. That's where I heard it.
Yes, who have since launched Splendor, Blackfeet, and they've got the Black Fleet, rather not Blackfeet. Thank you, and they've got the upcoming title Elysium that everybody's looking forward to from Matt Dunstan. So, and the rationale behind that is that they got the three guys got tired of running this company that they'd stolen off their friends and wanted to get back
the guilt was weighing them down.
Wanted to get back to just actually doing the hands-on stuff of designing and playtesting games and working with creators. So, but I think they still have some shares in the company and they're not entirely divested from them. Mm. And indeed, Space Cowboys is one of the many, many names and gaming brands that Asmodee is continuing to distribute.
Yes.
Along with WizKids, Cool Mini or Not, Matago, Repos Productions, Tree Frog, Istari, Queen Games, and of course Space Cowboys. So it's kind of, I mean, they're their own thing, but they work with all these other companies because they have production and distribution. They're able to offer a sort of fully integrated product. They're still seeing themselves as being a really innovative game specialist. They've got gamers at the very heart of what it is that they do, but at the same time, they've got an eye to expanding into the mass market, and the US is absolutely their big focus at the moment.
Of course, it would be.
The acquisition of Days of Wonder and Fantasy Flight Games, you know, proof of the pudding right now. And you know, there is a lot of information about Asmodee and their business operations online if you go digging around for it, and you look at their breakdown of, you know, where their exposure is in all the various markets that they operate in. Australia doesn't even rate a mention.
Yeah.
You know, we're there in the other countries, which is about 7% of all of their business, and that's about the same amount that they sell in Belgium. Oddly enough, Russia is apparently their main country of choice, but you know, the US is coming up there.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting to see the focus change from Germany to France as the sort of hotbed and the center of activity in the Eurogame world. And it's interesting also that they have the big ties in China, because obviously we've seen a huge expansion in Chinese production in our hobbies. And I remember when another podcast, The Spiel, they went to Essen. At the end of their Essen trip 2 or 3 years ago, they actually made a video called Made for Play, like a full-on half-an-hour movie of a board game production factory in Germany. I can't remember the name of it, but you can actually see it, I think, on Vimeo or somewhere like that. But like a full-on documentary about the production of board games and the whole process. But all this production of cards, of boards, of boxes, of everything like that, all was happening in this factory in Germany. And now what we're seeing is less and less of that happening and more of the, you know, I mean, Chinese production must account for, I would guess, 95% of board games now.
Yeah, it'd be very high, and unfortunately it's also the cause of a lot of the delays on projects, because the manufacturing isn't necessarily up to scratch. I mean, your Two Rooms and a Boom, it was about the paint quality on that.
Well,
there's also the shipping that goes, because it goes from some, you know, various countries in Asia to Europe and then to the States, and then it basically jumps on boats and goes back as completed.
I think the other thing, though, from my brief experience dealing with Chinese producers, is you have to have that time beforehand where you send them the specs, they send you back the first run, you make changes, send it back in. All that process takes some time. And what I think is, in the normal production of a board game, that would all happen well beforehand. What we're seeing with Kickstarter now is the Kickstarter project is up, it's funded, then that process starts, which means, you know, a much longer delay.
I think sometimes here in the West, we can be a little bit quick and have a sort of, you know, almost pseudo-racist reflex where we might think that Chinese manufacturing isn't up to scratch. I don't think that's true at all.
Oh, no, they do some amazing stuff.
You know, I think those guys are absolutely state-of-the-art in many of their factories. I think the main concern is cultural, right? Because in China, relationships are absolutely everything, because you don't really have a third umpire to fall back on sometimes if things go wrong.
Yeah.
So you've really, you know, for us in the West going in there and dealing with China, you really have to put that time and effort in. We've gotten off track, but Asmodee, it's certainly a name you're going to be hearing more and more of if they are seeking to rival the likes of Hasbro and Mattel, and more they're going to be working in the digital world, particularly through the guys in Days of Wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Their app, particularly the app for Ticket to Ride, has been a huge, huge success, and that team they have taken from Days of Wonder absorbed that into the larger Asmodee empire, and they're going to be leading the way. You can read more about this. There's a fantastic French language gaming blog called TrickTrack.net. That's TRICTRAC, TrickTrack.net. Stick it through Google Translate and just put up with it. It's a really, really great source of information. A hell of a lot better than us.
And speaking of poor information, we'll be back with more after this brief musical interlude. Yes, the delightful Cilla Jane, the lovely singer-songwriter from Melbourne, with her delightful track, Pick Me Up. I'm the Dice Man Cometh with 99.3 FM Edge Radio.
We've let Mark play a few tunes tonight because it is his birthday, and we're just sitting here gritting
our teeth. It's my birthday. I'm going to party like it's my birthday.
I don't know why we were going to play Susie Quattro's 48 Crash, but then we thought it might give away your age.
Yes, very funny.
Hey, we've been talking on and off during this show about a game that we're not allowed to talk about, and frankly, I'm confused. Because you made me sign this non-disclosure agreement.
I did.
And I couldn't make head nor tail of it. I've actually got no idea what it is I'm allowed to talk about or not.
Yes.
Because I see that everything that we know about this game is actually on the internet.
Well, that's why I thought I would email the designer of this game and just say, can we talk about this a little bit, please?
We should explain.
So, go for it.
We're doing a playtest.
We are. We're doing our very first official playtest with sanction from the designers, and this.
How did this come about?
Well, look, this came about through the internets. I was just killing some time again at work, quite potentially.
Oh.
surely it was in my lunch break though, and just came across a thread on Reddit in the board game section saying, "Hey, I've got a new game. Does anyone want to play test it?" And I jumped on and had a click. And what sort of piqued my interest is the person who posted it had a little picture next to their name, and the picture was the crossroad symbol from Dead of Winter.
Oh.
Yeah, so I thought, I'll just click into this, you know, and see what it is. And it was basically a little bit of a synopsis about, here's my game, we're looking to get, you know, some people towards playtesting it and see how it is going, and put your name on the list, and we'll see whether it goes. And I put our name on the list, and a couple of days later, we got an email from the designer saying, hey, yeah, we'd love to have you on board as playtesting.
Well, not just that, you also got a nice, colourful PDF, which really put the print in the print and play. You've gone to a hell of a lot of trouble with the laminator behind the scenes there.
Yeah.
How much money do you reckon you've spent?
I've probably spent about $40 so far on a game that I don't know how much is going to cost in the real version. But I thought I'd if we're going to do it, why not do it properly?
Are we allowed to say what the name of the game is?
Yes. Now, so what we are...
I don't want to say it because I'm going to get... I want you to get in trouble.
Oh, hang on. Redacted...
Okay.
No, can't say that either.
Yes, we can.
No.
We can.
And that I think that picture we posted that just had all those white-backed cards, you couldn't tell what deck was what because they were just all white on the back. I think we had to pull that as well, didn't we?
Yeah. But anyway, back in your cage, Mark. So after consulting with lawyers and most importantly the designers, we're allowed to talk about... Now, the game is called Vault Wars. So Vault Wars is a... card game.
Mm-hmm.
It is all about bidding and bluffing, and I guess the easy way to describe it is thinking about some of these auction hunters, TV shows that are on there where, look, the theme of this game, and it is all readily available on the Board Game Geek page, and I've checked, we're allowed to talk about it. Look, basically the premise is a whole bunch of adventurers have gone forth, collected loot, and then some of them have just never come back. They must have died. So all their loot is available to be collected or sold to the highest bidder.
Hordes of treasure from D&D characters that's just lying there begging for someone to come and...
Yeah, locked up in the medieval self-storages.
Exactly right. And look, I think it's a really fun theme. It's really, really interesting. And look, we've only had a couple of times at the table, but what's good about it is the bluffing and the mechanics that we can't really talk about. But, you know, I think everyone is constantly engaged with it. It's got a standard game and then a little expansion of workers, which adds a bit more, I guess, in-depth strategy to it. But what really piques my interest personally is the fact that the designer on this is John Gilmore, who, you know, he designed Dead of Winter, he's got a massive pedigree for, you know, possibly game that will, if not already won some of the Game of the Years for 2014, you know, probably is going to. He's a really clever designer. He knows how to make good games. He's got Ben Harkins on board to do this as well. It's a lot of fun. You're having fun with it?
Yeah, look, I really enjoyed it. Probably more so because I won. but yeah, look, it's got some really interesting parts to it that I can't talk about. But those bits were really interesting, and some other bits that I can't talk about were also really interesting. And I liked how those two things
that we can't talk about
combined together. And in the end, it was really interesting how you made some really poor decisions, Trent.
Oh, very poor decisions. And you made for a change.
You ended up with a whole bunch of things crap that we can't talk about. but those things were not worth anything compared to the other things we can't talk about.
It's a very different beast to Dead of Winter. It's more of a light semi-medium weight card game, I'd say. It probably... look, we're going through the playtesting stage, so things are all preliminary. Artwork's not finished. All of that just makes it a really interesting process to be involved in. And I guess I just want to thank John and Ben for inviting us in. What are they calling their publishing?
Floodgate Games.
Floodgate Games. Yeah, I just want to thank them for allowing us to be a part of it. What it basically involves for us is going online and filling out a Google Doc after every game.
And having to play games.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's horrible. We have to play games.
And we get a free copy of this at the end.
Yeah, if we play it enough. So we play it over and over again. But what I think is really exciting is we're also going to have a chat with them in the next couple of weeks because, you know, this game will be, you know, taking the next stage in its development. So we're going to tee up an interview. I've already got the, you know, the agreement signed, and someone's going to have a chat to them in where we can actually say a bit more about this game.
Yeah, excellent.
Hope so. Okay, look, if you want to have a chat to us, if you've got something to say about the show, if you've got something that you'd like us to talk about, a game you think we should play, a hot news tip, something happening in your local area with your local Australian gaming group, we don't know about it until you tell us.
And look, one of the things I did post the other day on our Facebook page was for you out there to spread the love. Because we know that, you know, we have 267 likes on our Facebook page. We get about 100 subscribers every week. We know that there are thousands upon thousands of you gamers out there playing games every week. And we'd love you to get out there amongst your local gaming groups and spread the love. Let them know that there's an Australian board gaming podcast, not just radio show, but podcast, that they can listen to every week and hear Australian thoughts and Australian voices.
And we're not the only one. I mean, the Board Game Nights, you know, AOS and all those guys up in Townsville, they're doing a really good job as well. They've just, you know, reactivated. Yeah. So, you know, good on you guys. There's also, Aaron and
Action Points.
Thank you. Action Points. They talk about video games as well. Yep. So we're just part of a rapidly expanding family.
Which is the way
we like to think of it. And if you really like the show, jump on iTunes and give us a thumbs up and a review because that really helps.
Absolutely. Anyway, we've been the Dice Men Cometh. You've been great again for listening to us. We will see you next week.
Happy birthday, Mark!
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.